James Holman on behalf of the Appalachian plaintiff, Cherry Gilbert, counsel. This is an appeal from a summary judgment with the trial court below. I'd like to focus first on the trial court's decision with respect to the employment discrimination alleged by Cherry Haywood. That discrimination was, we feel, sufficient in the record to have met the four prongs or components required by the case law, that she was within the protected class. She was African American. There's no contest over that. That she was adversely affected by a job decision, there doesn't seem to be any question of that either. She was indeed terminated. The two elements that seem to be of question or primary question are, was she satisfactorily performing? And then secondly, was there anyone similarly situated outside the class?
She wasn't fired for that, was she?
Well, we're not certain what indeed she was fired for.
Acting up.
Well, if acting up was the reason that she was fired, and I think that the record is unclear as to what the reason she was fired for. If acting up was the reason that she was fired, that acting up would have been based upon the alleged altercation with herself and her supervisor on December the 2nd. And I think that a fair reading of those facts would allow the court a material question of fact in terms of whether that was just a heated exchange between management and employee, or whether that was actually a manager becoming heated and assaulting an employee, or whether that was merely just insubordinate conduct. And in order to get to insubordinate conduct, you have to come to conclusions about what happened.
Why do you have to do that? Why isn't the only question whether Foote thought that that's what had happened, because he chose to believe Mr. Schumann's account, and Foote decides, I can't have an employee like this around anymore. It doesn't make any difference if Foote's information is at some metaphysical level correct or incorrect. That's what he thinks happened. Why isn't he entitled to take this action?
His letter indicating termination of my client is not specific in terms of what he's relying upon. He lists three or four approaches or problems with my client as an employee. The pattern of insubordinate behavior is not supported in the record. The only thing
that doesn't matter. If he thinks that she's been insubordinate, do we think he's lying when he says that?
Well, I think if he thinks that she's insubordinate, part of the difficulty and argument that I had throughout is that if this is an insubordination issue, he should be weighing that issue based upon Lucent's specific policies, procedures, and guidelines in terms of that's the mindset or the standards that he should be using in order to determine is she insubordinate or not. I think the record is clear that he didn't apply those standards at all. I would concede, Your Honor, I think that he made a determination, and the determination was both outside the standards or applicable without the use of the appropriate standards, and is within what I would argue is a material question of fact.
But if you agree that he made a determination, rightly or wrongly, within Lucent standards or not, that this was an insubordinate employee, and for that reason he terminates her, that means he didn't terminate her for an impermissible reason, namely on the basis of her race or any other protected characteristic. The law doesn't say employers have to keep insubordinate employees, does it?
I would agree with that. But my point, Your Honor, is that if a company is going to have specific standards on abrupt termination, on insubordination, then the company ought to apply those standards in making a decision on whether an employee is truly insubordinate or not.
Well, that may be right, except that's a separate point from whether the company violates Title VII if it doesn't.
Well, I think there's a linkage between the policy, or should be a linkage, let me rephrase that, between the policies that should have applied, the mindset of the decision maker, Foote, in this circumstance, and whether or not that decision, premised upon potentially a legitimate reason or not. Every employment case has a potentially legitimate excuse or rationale from an employer standpoint. You can argue that there was a performance issue. You can argue that there was an insubordination issue. I would suggest to the court that the way the case law reads is that that's a rebuttable issue, and that we should be looking to, in rebutting that, what were the facts? What was his mindset about this employee, and what were the standards that he should have utilized in order to come to the conclusion that he did? And I think based upon those factors, his conclusion was not only inappropriate from a loose and policy standpoint, but inappropriate based upon potential rebuttal evidence that was in the record in terms of, was this one situation a matter of insubordination or not? It seems to me that the December 2nd issue is the only matter that clearly could be interpreted or arguably interpreted as insubordinate. The other issues in terms of failing to establish a warm, fuzzy relationship with your management or accept constructive feedback are very subjective reasons that were also given for her being abruptly terminated. Neither of those reasons are appropriate under the Lucent standards for abruptly terminating her. And in fact, if you go back to what the Lucent people call stray comments about, or stray comments attributable to Foote, one of Foote's basic, I'm paraphrasing, but one of his basic comments is that he's not about to help any African-American sisters because they complain too much and they don't appreciate the help. Well, if you look at the two standards that are cited in the termination letter, I think you can reasonably argue that they fall right into his mindset, even with these stray comments. And it does suggest a discriminatory reason for her termination. And perhaps I'm being too isolated in my view of what could be insubordinate or not, but it seems to me that from the record and what's been argued, the only possible arguing with your manager over how you were rated in a performance review surely cannot be an instance of insubordination. And given that, we're left with the one December incident. And I would agree with Your Honor, I think that Mr. Foote came to conclusions about that incident, and in some part, and we're not sure from his letter what part, but in some part, he based the decision on that. And my quarrel with that is his facts are rebuttable, and the criteria that he should have utilized under the circumstance, even through the company's own policies, would have dictated a different result. And I'm now into my...
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank
Holman.
You.
Mr. Morrison?
I'll please the court. This case focuses principally upon the termination of Cherry Haywood's employment at Lucent, which occurred in December of 1999. Haywood, as the record shows, was a poor-performing employee who had a history of disruptive behavior in the workplace and a history of insubordination. One of her managers, Spencer Foote, who was also an African-American manager at Lucent, decided in December of 1999 to terminate Cherry Haywood's employment. Just less than a year before, in January of 1999,
Spencer Foote had made the decision to bring Cherry Haywood into his organization as an employee.
I have to say to you, Mr. Morrison, I'm at least not normally too persuaded by the idea that there's some solidarity among groups, you know, whether it's African Americans or whatever. I can think of plenty of instances, you know, in which, say, much more senior women are even more harsh on younger women than male managers would be. Not always, you know, sometimes they're even-handed and sometimes it runs the other way. But it seems to me we just need to look at what did Mr. Foote, an individual who was a senior manager, do and assess the case on that basis.
I think that's correct. I simply mentioned these two factors, both Foote's race and Foote's role in bringing Haywood into the organization, because this court has recognized those as, while not determinative factors, they have some weight in the pretext question. But I think you're correct, Your Honor, that the focus is on what was, and you mentioned this.
Well, the second has weight. I think probably the first should not have weight. And we've actually made that point with regard to age. We're not any longer going to say that if an older person does the firing, we're going to say, well, since he's an older person, obviously wouldn't discriminate against other old people. I don't think that's the way. Well, you don't want to have a situation where firms hire black people so that they can fire black people with impunity, right? I mean, that's ridiculous.
That may well be the case, and I think certainly this, while that issue may be debatable, the focus of this litigation is on what was in Mr. Foote's mind, regardless of his personal characteristics.
Hard to say how that issue can even be debatable, since the Supreme Court decided Castaneda against Partita in 1977, rejecting
right.
this very point 25 years ago.
That's a fair point.
Hmm.
So on to Mr. Foote, who we will treat as an individual who was dealing with Ms. Haywood.
Correct. The only issue in the case with respect to Haywood's termination is whether Foote honestly believed the reasons that he set forth. And he set forth three reasons in his termination letter: her inability to establish a constructive working relationship with her management, her inability to accept constructive feedback about her performance, and her history of insubordinate behavior. Mr. Holman focused on the December 2nd incident and asserts that that's the only incident of disruptive or inappropriate behavior by Cherry Haywood. But that ignores her entire history in Spencer Foote's organization. In particular, there was a meeting in June of 1999 regarding Haywood's performance evaluation at that point in time, in which the meeting was brought to an end after Haywood repeatedly interrupted her supervisor attempting to give her additional performance feedback, which she had requested. There were other incidents leading up to the December 2nd incident. Further, as Judge Wood pointed out, there's no dispute that Foote actually believed the version of events on the December 2nd incident that he appears to have relied on, namely Schumann's version of events. Whether or not there's some dispute about what happened at peripheral matters on the December 2nd incident really isn't relevant to the pretext inquiry, because what matters is whether Foote, when he articulated his reasons for terminating Haywood, actually believed what he was saying. And there's simply no evidence in the record to show that Foote didn't believe the three reasons that he put forth. As to the comments that plaintiff has relied on throughout this litigation, there's only one comment that is established by something other than inadmissible hearsay. The bulk of the comments to which Haywood referred are simply her testimony as to what other employees supposedly said about what Spencer Foote had said to them. There was one comment that she testified about that occurred in June of 1999, in which Foote stated that he was, allegedly stated that he was tired of helping black women, and then proceeded to tell Cherry Haywood that she really should have just focused on fixing the problems that had been identified in June of 1999. What's absent from that discussion, especially given that Haywood and Foote were both African American, is any discussion of race. It's arguably a comment about sex, but that's not an issue in this litigation. For those reasons, there's also no evidence, even though plaintiff has pointed to concerns about Lucent's failure to follow its policies, there is no evidence in the record that Lucent actually failed to follow a policy relevant to Haywood's situation, the situation of terminating an employee who had engaged in insubordinate disruptive behavior over a long period of time. There's also no evidence that Lucent's use of alleged use of subjective criteria to evaluate Haywood. It's a question of whether or not it's looking at insubordination is subjective, but there's no evidence in the record to show that the use of those criteria was simply a mask for discrimination, or for that matter, that the deviations from policies that are alleged by Haywood was an attempt to cover up discrimination. There's no claim under federal law or even Illinois law against an employer for violating a policy that's non-contractual, unless it's also discriminatory. And there's no evidence on the latter point. Finally, Haywood has pointed out throughout this case, or argued throughout this case, that there is evidence that other employees in the same situation were treated differently. But there's no evidence as to that point either, because there's no evidence that there was a similarly situated employee reporting to the same direct supervisor, Robert Schumann, who had engaged in the same type of disruptive behavior. So there's really no basis to compare Haywood to other employees and draw a conclusion of discrimination, a point which undercuts her prima facie case as well.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Morrison. Mr. Holman, how much time did you have? Minutes?
I'd like to deal first with the alleged history of poor performance. The prior performance review, the non-foot review, ended up being a meets expectations. It was a 3. Her level of review, even in foot's performance review, was a 5. To me, the universe at Lucent is a 1 through 6 universe. The 6 is a mandatory termination. The 6 rated employee is a non-performing employee. For that, they're rewarded with termination. A 5 employee, by their own policies, is an employee who should be placed on a performance improvement plan. And with respect to the two individuals in Foote's department under his direction, and since he's the decision maker here in terms of termination, I would suggest that he's relevant in terms of the comparative group. They're white male. And they have 5
time
six.
Is expired. Thank you very much. Okay. Next case for argument.